This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me William Chernoff, one of the leading trial lawyers in the country who's led the way in keeping insurance companies accountable. And he also managed to get compensation for victims of the Holocaust. He's the senior partner in the California law firm of Chernoff, Bidart, Echevarria, and Bentley. Bill Chernoff, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Well, it's great to be here.
You know, I've heard your name over the years, especially when I was back working for Ralph Nader, because you had a connection with Nader. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your background?
Well, I grew up in a very small town in Wisconsin. I actually started out on a farm. When I was about 8 years old, we moved to the big city of Cribbets, Wisconsin, which at that time had 500 people. And my dad was a lawyer there, who just helped out with the local community with their taxes and leases and divorces and just general practice. He was the only lawyer in the whole area. And, you know, got paid with chicken and cheese and stuff like that. And then I took my undergrad at the University of Miami in Florida. I think my parents wanted to get me as far away as they could, and so I went there. And then came to the University of Wisconsin Law School for my law degree, and that's where I think I had my awakening, because up until then I wasn't the greatest student in the world, but once I got there I was inspired by the wonderful professors and the progressive spirit of the law school, and kind of started my life.
And so were your parents political in a way, or did you get that progressive politics here in Madison?
My father was somewhat political. That was back in the La Follette days. He was a follower of Bob La Follette. And so, yes, I think he instilled in me a progressive spirit.
And so you got that spirit from your dad, and also it was reinforced here at the law school at the University of Wisconsin. I read somewhere that you said you wanted to help the underdog, but there must have been a lot of temptation coming out of law school to do other work, to work in corporate law, for instance, more lucrative work, at least out of the gate. How'd you avoid that?
Well, when I got out of law school, there was a draft going on. And so it was either go in into the Army as an enlisted man or try to get into the JAG Corps. And I was lucky enough to get a direct commission into the Judge Advocate General's Corps, which is the lawyer part of the Army. And I got great experience in the Army. I did a lot of court-martial work. I also had to represent soldiers with their legal problems.
So in the court-martial stuff, were you representing the soldiers or were you representing the military?
I was always representing the soldiers who were being prosecuted. It was like still representing the underdog.
What was that like?
Well, very, very good experience, because those are very hard trials. The juries are, you know, officers from colonels down to lieutenants and so on. And it was very difficult to win a court-martial, and I was lucky enough to win a few of them. But it was a great experience, because every month I had another court-martial, and for a young lawyer getting out of law school, it's a great legal experience. And then after the JAG Corps, I decided to go to California and started to work for a plaintiff's law firm and continued on with representing just average people who went up against the corporate structure. I call it corporate America. In my case, it was insurance companies that were the target of our lawsuits.
And these insurance companies were just trying to cheat people out of the benefits that they had coming to them?
Yeah. I found out there that happened quite a bit. My first case was a person that had a disability insurance policy, and he was disabled. And then I found that they had a clause in the policy which was called a house confinement clause, which meant you not only had to be disabled, you had to be confined to your house, and they caught him going to the doctor, and so they cut him off. And I thought, that's ridiculous. And I took it to a jury, and a jury thought it was ridiculous also and came out with a nice award. And from then on, it kind of snowballed. More cases came in where people said they were being taken advantage of by insurance companies. And we started a law out there called bad faith, which meant that if we showed the insurance company treated somebody unfairly or in bad faith, that they could not only get the damages of what they deserved under their insurance policy, but they could get damages for, excuse me, emotional distress and even punitive damages in a proper case.
I'm speaking with Bill Chernoff. He is the senior partner in the California law firm of Chernoff, Bidart, Echevarria, and Bentley. One of those cases, I understand the claim was only for something like $48, but you got a punitive damage in the millions. What was that case like?
Well, it's very interesting. That was a senior citizen. He did only have a $48 claim that was denied. But the reason we got the large punitive award is when I looked into his insurance policy, he said to me, you know, this is a new policy. I had an old one. They told me to throw my old one away and keep the new and improved one. I said, well, go find the old one. And I compared the old one with the new one. And the new one was anything but new and improved. It was worse. It was 40% worse. Then I got to subpoena the records of the insurance company and found out they did this to 100,000 other senior citizens. They send out a letter with a new policy, told them it was new and improved, and it was worse by a collective $4.5 million over 100,000 senior citizens. And the jury just punished them $4.5 million, which was just giving back the profit they had made illicitly.
So on these punitive damages, I mean, if some Republicans listening to this, I mean, the person's blood might be boiling in the kitchen right now along with a pot of water because, you know, they say plaintiffs, lawyers like you who get these big punitive damages are bankrupting businesses and bankrupting healthcare companies and everything. And so Republicans have had this concerted effort over the last couple decades anyway, both nationally and state by state, to limit punitive damages. How do you respond to that kind of a attack?
Well, punitive damages are really, the purpose of it is to deter unfair conduct and actually to punish the wrongdoer. And quite frankly, some conservatives I find on jurors are for punishment. They think punishment's a good thing. And it is unfair competition if you have one business or one insurance company cutting corners and screwing people. It's an unfair advantage to the ones that are doing business honestly. So when they really stop to think about it, it's not anything against their principles. But I do agree that what they have tried to do is limit punitive damages overall, and they've been somewhat successful because recently, there have been caps on punitive damages in some states. Even the U.S. Supreme Court has put a little bit of a lid on it. But it's still out there, well and alive, and insurance companies can be punished in Wisconsin and other states if you can prove, you know, they were engaged in fraudulent conduct or malicious conduct. It's a good thing, I think. We have to have some deterrent to an insurance company taking advantage of people because there isn't anything else really out there to make them behave.
What kind of governmental oversight is there either at the state level or the federal level?
Well, in the federal level, there's hardly any because the federal government doesn't deal with insurance. They all leave it to the various state departments of insurance, like Wisconsin has one, California. They all have a state department of insurance. But it's a very weak regulation, mainly because the insurance commissioner usually comes from the insurance industry. After he gets his job and does it, then he goes back to the insurance industry. It's called the revolving door problem. So we end up with very weak regulation by the government, and the only thing that's left is democracy, the jury, average people looking at what happened in a case and saying, hey, we don't want this happening. We're going to punish this company and hopefully straighten them out.
I've even heard some Republicans make the case against the jury system, too, and they just want a judge to hear it. You're a big believer in the jury.
Oh, yes, I am. I think a jury is, you know, the real democracy in this country. You have people from all walks of life I think they understand the problems. I don't see how. I mean, this is a constitutional right. Anybody, if they stop to think about it, it's just as important as the First Amendment, Second Amendment. This is the Seventh Amendment, the right to a jury trial. That's what distinguishes us from countries that don't have a democracy.
I'm speaking with Bill Chernoff. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. Bill Chernoff's the senior partner in the California law firm of Chernoff, Bidart, Echevarria, and Bentley. You told me before we went on that you're doing a lot of work representing consumers who aren't getting the coverage they need from healthcare companies. Well, what's that like?
Yes. Well, healthcare companies engage in bad faith practices too. People pay a lot of money for health insurance, and then when they find they need it, like they need a surgery or some other medical treatment, they find out that the health carrier is denying their coverage for one reason or another. I'll give you a good example that's topical now. They have a program that's called They Will Deny Claims If They Don't Think the Treatment Was Medically Necessary. So in other words, if your doctor says you need a surgery and you go in and you have the surgery and you run up bills of, let's say, $50,000, even though it's covered and you got an insurance policy, you may get a letter from the insurance carrier saying, we're not going to pay the $50,000 because we think that your doctor did something that was medically unnecessary. So we're not paying. So what they really do is they overrule the treating doctor as to what's medically necessary. So the question becomes, who determines what's medically necessary, your doctor or your insurance company?
And sometimes they do that prior to the surgery.
Yes, on pre-authorizations. You want to get your surgery pre-authorized, and they say, well, we're sorry, we don't think it's medically necessary, so you don't even get the treatment.
So what recourse then does that person have?
Well, when they come to us, if it's, for example, after the fact, we sue the insurance company for bad faith and saying, this is wrong. You didn't even ask the treating doctor what his reason was for the treatment. And 9 times out of 10, the jury will say, yeah, that's bad faith. And they'll require the company to pay the medical expenses and also give the person damages for all the hassle he or she had to go through, and maybe even in a given case, punitive damages.
And what right does the insurance company have to overturn the doctor's decision?
Well, they don't really have a right written anywhere, except there'll be a clause in your health carrier, in your health policy, if you look at it carefully, that says we will pay for medically necessary treatment.
So that's the clause they use.
Yeah, that's the clause they use. They don't say who's going to determine what's medically necessary. They keep that secret. They have their own little paid consultants and sometimes their own little paid medical people as well, nurses. What's really bad, they'll have a doctor who's, let's say, a OBGYN doctor determining that somebody shouldn't have had brain surgery. In other words, it's a different medical specialty is saying, no, it wasn't necessary.
Hmm. Now, I heard you worked with Michael Moore a little bit on Sicko. Tell me about that.
Well, I helped him. He heard about some of my cases, the bad faith insurance cases on health care. And so he used some of the examples in his film.
From some of your own clients and back cases?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm speaking with Bill Chernoff. He is a lawyer in California. He's the senior partner in the law firm of Chernoff, Bidart, Echevarria, and Bentley. He's really been a pioneer in suing insurance companies on behalf of the consumer, on the policyholder's behalf, and has done more to keep insurance companies accountable than anyone probably in the country. One thing that you did also was you worked to get compensation for children of Holocaust victims or family members. How in the world did you get involved in that?
Well, that was an insurance case also. It involved life insurance because, insurance companies screw people, whether it's life insurance, health insurance, homeowner insurance, car insurance, boat insurance. You got any, people have 5, 10, 15 different policies, and sometimes they don't want to pay. In the Holocaust case, the people that died in the Holocaust, many, many of them, thousands of them, tens of thousands, had life insurance. when they went to concentration camps and got, you know, gassed in the chambers there. But the life insurance companies at that time kept it quiet. They didn't pay the life insurance to the survivors.
No, these were German life insurance companies or Polish life insurance companies? Or
yes, German life insurance companies like Allianz, Italian life insurance company like Generali. They were foreign insurance companies, but they still did business in not only in Europe, but in the United States. They did most of their business in Europe, but they did some in the United States. So we were able to get jurisdiction over these life insurance companies, and we were able to show that they never paid these claims, and we had to get over a lot of hurdles like the statute of limitations, and these insurance policies were written in foreign languages, and the currency was foreign currency. But it all started with one case that we were able to pursue and show that this person, his name was Adolf Stern, from Czechoslovakia.
So the Stern family found you, or you found the Stern family?
The Stern family found me. It was the niece of a survivor found me, and we started digging into it. And one thing led to another, and even though they said they couldn't find any insurance policies for him, we were able to find his insurance policy, and we were able to find 300,000 other policies that were tucked away in a warehouse in Trieste, Italy.
Mm-hmm. That must have been a discovery.
Yes, that was quite a discovery. From then on, we thought for sure once we found the policy that they would pay. But no, they didn't. They even said, even once we had the policy, they said, no, we're not going to pay because the currency was devalued, and so the policy wasn't worth anything. And they came up with all kinds of legal barriers, but we finally got a trial date. And once we got a trial date, the judge in California ordered them to come to a settlement conference. And they settled the case, and one thing led to another. There was an international commission that was formed because of these cases that gave compensation to a whole range of people. And then the United States government got involved and came up with what's called the German Foundation Settlement, which produced $5 billion to survivors worldwide. For compensation, not only for insurance, but for slave labor and other things. So it was like a 10-year battle, but it was worth it.
It must have been gratifying to you.
Yes, that was one of my better accomplishments, I would have to say.
And I imagine the companies were prepared to settle once a date was set, because they could have got hammered even worse by a jury.
Oh, yeah, I think they would have really got hammered by a jury. I think once the court system started getting into it, once the public opinion started gathering about, you know, these people never got paid, and I think they knew that they had to settle these matters.
I'm speaking with Bill Chernoff. He's the senior partner in the California law firm of Chernoff, Bedard, Echevarria, and Bentley. He's the leading lawyer in the country against insurance companies, keeping them accountable, suing on behalf of the policyholders. Insurance companies, they have this built-in incentive just not to pay. And what are some of the more outrageous dodges that you've seen?
Well, that's true. When you make more profits by denying claims, you have an incentive, if you're an insurance company, to try to really clamp down on paying people, even when they deserve a payment. And that's where the problem comes in, because you know, they're your friend while you're paying premiums, and you pay premiums for protection. So if you have a catastrophe like a fire or a flood or a surgery or something, and you really need them and they're not there, it really causes a lot of problems. People have gone bankrupt because of medical bills that have gone unpaid. I had one case where somebody even committed suicide because he couldn't deal with all the financial problems.
That must have been harsh to find that news out.
Yeah, that resulted in a $20 million punitive damage award. You know, they're just really bad examples where people will have a flood in their house and they'll say, well, you know, you caused the flood. Or there's a fire and they'll say, well, you know, you must have set the fire. And if, you know, that's one of the most outrageous things I've said, where they don't have any evidence, but they accuse somebody, let's say, of arson, so they can start negotiating and end up paying like half of what they should pay because the person gets scared.
Were you involved at all in the post-Katrina insurance questions where the people in New Orleans, you know, whose house you're talking about floods, that's why it comes to mind. Did you do anything down there?
No, I pretty much stick to California, although we do some work in other states with lawyers from other states. I'm in a small town called Claremont, California. And but I did hurricane work. I represented the American Samoan government when they had a big hurricane, and we got a nice award for the American Samoan government because, you know, what happens in a hurricane is most insurance policies cover wind damage, but they don't cover flood damage. And in the case I had for the American Samoan government, they said, well, all the damage was from a flood. But we showed that it's really the wind that drives the waves in. So we were successful in that case. And but I never did get down to Katrina. There were a lot of lawyers down in Mississippi and Louisiana that handled most of those cases.
Now, you've worked with Ralph Nader, as I have 30 years ago. Tell me what kind of work you've done with Ralph.
Well, mainly two things. Way back when, Ralph and I started what's called the National Insurance Consumer Organization, where it's a national organization that deals with consumer insurance issues. More recently, at the University of Wisconsin, we started a consumer law clinic where students learn consumer law and get inspired, hopefully, once they graduate, to go out and work for consumer law firms and consumer projects. And Ralph came to the University of Wisconsin, and we teamed up on that project, which was a very worthwhile project. It is still going on, even though we started it probably 25 years ago. There's still a very vigorous consumer law clinic at the University of Wisconsin.
And are you doing these clinics at other law schools around the country?
Right now, Wisconsin's the only one that that we've targeted because I'm a University of Wisconsin graduate. And but I would imagine other law schools around the country have similar projects, but I haven't been involved in them.
I'm speaking with William Chernoff. Bill Chernoff's the senior partner in the California law firm of Chernoff, Bidart, Echevarria, and Bentley. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. So you've been fighting corporate power, as you put it, and I like to put it too, for many, many years now. How do you think the fight is going nationally against corporate power?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's the corporations are getting the upper hand. They've been able to restrict remedies for ordinary citizens. They have this thought going now that you know, everything is we need business to create jobs, we need less regulation. I don't understand that at all, because less regulation is just going to bring more more abuse for consumers. There'll probably be more lawsuits. I'll probably be a lot busier once they decide to keep hands off. And as you know, Wall Street created this whole economic disaster we're in now, yet people are talking about less regulation for Wall Street. I don't understand that thinking at all. So I'm hoping that, you know, I know things go, the pendulum swings back and forth. If you've been around a long time, you know that that happens. So I'm hoping this is just a temporary little setback, and that in the near future we'll get back to where, you know, business should really thrive, but we need regulation so that business is done honestly and that people aren't taken advantage of.
The Supreme Court is such an obstacle, too, right now. The Roberts Court is so friendly, or so much in the pocket of corporations, with the Citizens United decision and a whole other range of decisions. As an attorney, when you see that the highest court in the land is hostile to the kind of work you're doing, does that affect your work at all?
Oh, yes, it does. It does. They've did several things recently that hurt our kind of work. One is arbitration clauses. They're throwing everything into arbitration that they can. People sign these contracts. They have no way of knowing that if something happens to them, they can't take their case to court. They're stuck with an arbitrator who is usually friendly to business. They put some limits on punitive damages. It seems like every decision that comes out kind of has a little flavor to it that is bent towards business rather than the average citizen. And certainly it'd be nice if that was turned around in short order.
And then the Citizens United case is such a disaster as far as election campaign contributions goes. They're calling corporations persons. Of course, they're not the first Supreme Court to do it, but that's taking it to its most ludicrous degree. How contaminating of our political system do you think that decision is going to be?
Well, I think as we're seeing now for the first time, it is contaminating. The more money that big business can throw towards TV advertising, I think it does have an effect. We'll see how it plays out in this election, but for corporations to have constitutional rights because somebody says they're a person, what they neglect is usually on the other side of the scale is a real person that is having their constitutional rights taken away from them. Like in a case I recently had, the corporation was given constitutional rights on punitive damages and said, well, we can't have too severe punitive damages because that would be unconstitutional. But what about the constitutional rights of the person involved who has a constitutional right to a jury trial? They pretty much take the jury out of the equation, and once it gets up to the appellate courts, they decide what to do based upon their own philosophy.
Do you have an opinion on the Affordable Care Act, whether that's a step forward? You're doing a lot of health insurance work, so I just wondered your view on that.
Well, I think it is a step forward. It's going to have, 30 million more customers. I just hope they're going to be treated right. It's going to probably make my job a little harder because there'll be more people that will be getting screwed by insurance companies because, let's face it, they're going to find out ways to create loopholes and to try to not pay so they can increase their profits. That's just the name of the game. If you put a lid on their profits like we do for public utilities like water, gas, electricity, because health insurance is getting to be a very close to a necessity of life. And if they were limited in their profit structure, I think there would be less problems.
Is there a move to do that, to put a ceiling on their profits?
Well, I think the Affordable Care Act, as I recall, it does put somewhat of a lid. They have to put a certain amount of their money into health care as opposed to administration. So that's a type of lid that I think will be helpful.
Yeah, something like 15% only can go into administration.
Yes.
The number that sticks in my head. I'm not sure.
Yeah, 15 right. Or 20%, mm-hmm. Somewhere in that neighborhood, yes.
We've got less than a minute left, Bill Chernoff. I'm just wondering what advice you have to a young person who's thinking of becoming a lawyer. Is there still opportunity in the law to, fight corporate power, fight the good fight like you've been doing? Or is it, I know so many people get unhappy once they become lawyers.
Well, I think there is opportunity. I would encourage students to go to work for consumer law firms, plaintiff firms, law firms that are taking cases against the corporate structure. We need that balance in our system because if we don't have balance in the system, some lawyers taking cases to keep big business honest, then we're just going to have a society where the average person's rights are going to be diluted and diluted to where big business is just going to run over the average guy like a Mack truck.
Well, we certainly don't need to have that happen. Bill Chernoff, thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed being here.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.